Well, hello out there, and welcome to the Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. Got a voice today, got a guest today, a handyman, the handyman, Danny Lane, the cowboy handyman. Welcome, Danny.
Thanks. Yeah. Good to be here.
Yes. Hey, so Danny, so you grew up here in Jerseyville?
Yes, sir. I did.
Yep. And so tell us about it a little bit. You grew up in Jerseyville, and then what happened? Did you go to college anywhere?
Yeah, I went to Lewis and Clark for 2 years and got an associate's degree there, and then moved on to SIUE and got a bachelor's degree there in business.
In business?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that you'd be in the handyman business? Is that something that you dreamed of when you were in school?
No. Growing up, my dad would try to show me things and get me to help him, and I was wearing out basketballs. I wanted to shoot basketballs and play sports. I had no
I don't blame you on that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was my deal. And I was the only child, kind of spoiled. And but I got out, got a sales job, and it was okay for a while. But I got back to – left that and started working for horses, with horses, and kind of just doing that kind of thing. And then I come back. My cousin had a construction company, Greg Sams, Sams & Son Construction, and he needed some help. And I dove into that, and I didn't even hardly know a 16-penny from an 8-penny nail or whatever. But he helped train me. Yeah, the poor guy.
And you caught on pretty quick.
Yeah, seemed like. Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, we build custom homes, did a lot of stuff around this area.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I remember. And Greg's retired now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So how long have you been doing the handyman job?
Technically, I've been doing it for years. Working with my church and with other people. But as far as full time, it's been about 2 years.
I see.
Yes, sir.
Is it working out for you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going good.
I would think you'd have plenty of people needing some work done.
Yes, sir. They do.
Hey, but on the horses, I mean, you kind of look like a horse guy. You know, I was a horse guy at one time, you know, for years. But one thing about horses is it's not cheap to be a horse guy.
Right, right.
So did you raise horses, or what was your deal with horses?
I started out, my uncle, Donnie Lane, he had an appliance business around this area for years, and he was a known cowboy. And he had a horse out in Kane in about maybe 20 acres. And he said, here's a saddle. He gave me a saddle. So there's the horse. So just, you know, knock yourself out. So I go out there, start riding, messing around. I rode with him a little
bit. Like how old were you?
I was around 15 when that started going on, 14, 15. And then when I was 16, I got a vehicle and could, you know, run out there myself. And his name was Casey, and he was from the King Ranch down in Texas. He was actually a good bred horse.
Okay.
But he was ornery, so him and I had some go-arounds, but I had a good time with it. And then I left the sales job, went to work for a halter horse place, barn, over in Troy, Illinois. Then I went to a thoroughbred training place over in
the... Oh, a halter horse place. What's a halter horse place? What's that?
He basically gets halter horses and...
What do you mean by a halter horse? You don't ride them, you just have a halter and you drive... Huh?
Yeah, they're kind of like a bodybuilder of the horse industry. They're just big, muscular. You don't really ride them.
You don't ride them.
No, you can, I guess, but they say they'll beat you to death. I mean, they just don't have a nice, easy gait or anything.
I mean, are they like a Morgan horse or a quarter horse, or what kind of horse are they?
They can be quarter horses. They can be part quarter, part draft, part just whatever that has that kind of a look. You know, because you can take a quarter horse, some of them that you can ride and do stuff with, they're big enough that it's all about the conformation. And you can actually move them over and win some halter horse. But if you get into the upper echelon.
So this is the quarter horse or the halter horse thing. This is about showing horses, mm-hmm. right? And and you can actually win money showing horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get big enough, you can win a lot of money, I guess.
How do you weight train a horse? That's my question.
Well, they lunge them on a lunge line. They either get them in round pen and work them, or they get them on a lunge line and work them. But a lot of that is just genetics, just getting the right kind of horse, right kind of mare with the right kind of stud, and it's more about that than actual. But they give them stuff. I mean, they give them supplements, and they beef them up. I mean,
That's so halter horsing, and then what else did you use as far as horses go?
Then
were you like a horse whisperer?
No, not at all. No, I worked for Bob Cunningham over in just past Bethalto.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he trained. I was just bouncing around trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I wanted to be in it, but I didn't know. And so he trained thoroughbreds. He had a mile track out behind his place, probably, I guess still does. And then he also trained quarter horses, cutting horses. Uh-huh. So I got to cleaning stalls and messing around doing all that kind of stuff. And these horse shoers started showing up, shoeing these horses, and they made it look so easy, and they made so much money at it. I'm like, you know what? That's what I need to do. So I went up to the Midwest Horseshoeing School and became a horseshoer.
And all right. So, well, what's the ABCs on shoeing a horse? Okay, you got a horse there. You know, he doesn't really know what you're doing, does he?
They should. Yeah, if they're trained right, if they're raised right, you start picking their feet up just about as soon as they hit the ground. As soon as you can mess with them, you pick their feet up. You kind of bang. You can bang on their hoof. Like, you know, everything that's going to happen to them later needs to be done. It's called imprint training, and it needs to be done early on. There are some horses that nobody ever did that with them, and it's the first time or the second time or the third time. And there's all kinds of ways, all kinds of things that happen. You can tie one leg up. And you can run around.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that before, tying a leg up.
Until they get
tired.
So they're
on three legs, and they don't have a choice.
Yeah, and you can run them around on three legs till they get tired and then decide what they're going to do. You can throw them down and do it. There's all different kinds of ways. I try to stay away from those.
Oh, yeah, but as far as shoeing a horse.
Yeah, you take their foot. It grows out. Every month and a half to 2 months, you know, they probably need to be done. They're not always done. Some of them, it's just a different schedule. Thoroughbreds, when they're racing them, they get it done every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They shave every little bit they can off, and they put some aluminum shoes on them. But the rest of them, you can trim them. If they're not going to be on concrete or hard rock, you can just keep them trimmed. You don't need to put shoes on them. But if they're a working horse, you know, rodeo, barrel racing, you know, whatever it's going to be like that, then they always put shoes on and just protect their feet.
So a horse that's shoed, a working horse, how often does his shoes got to be changed?
I'd say they probably do it a month to a month and a half.
Really?
Usually on a 6 week schedule, you know, but again, that kind of varies on the horse. You know, there's horses that have lighter colored hooves. White color, green color, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Those are flakier, they tend to be softer. And so those sometimes have to be done a little bit more where you got a black, hard foot, you know, you might be able to, you can wait. It really kind of depends on the horse.
And they don't feel anything, right?
If you do it right, they don't.
Yeah.
You trim them, they don't feel anything with that. If you drive a nail the wrong way, get it too close to the quick.
Yes.
They you can
kinda
stick
kind of like
them,
our fingernails.
Yeah, pretty much. If you stick something down in there, yeah, you can trim your nail, but if you stick it underneath there, yeah.
It hurts. So. Can you make any money doing shoeing horses?
Yeah, especially lately, you can make. Yeah,
it cost?
It's gone up from $80 to $100 to $120 per horse for shoes. $30 to $40 to $50 to trim, which we used to get $15 when I got out of school in the early '90s. It was $15 to trim and $40 to $50 to put shoes on. Now it's upwards of around $100, and it takes you about an hour and a half.
That's not too bad of money.
No, trimming horses takes maybe 15, 20 minutes to half an hour, depending on if they fight you or not or whatever.
Did you ever think about getting back into that?
No.
No?
I hurt my back.
Okay.
I kind of hurt my back doing it. I was up in Aspen, Colorado, and I was trimming horses for this gal I was dating at the time, a cowgirl up there, and I tried to do too many. I guess I was trying to show off, and I was trimming three or maybe four at a time, I guess, at one time, and I just into my back, and I never enjoyed it so much after that. I really never loved it anyway. You got to kind of love it, you know, and you got to kind of build yourself up for it. It's better to be short, you know, and stocky rather than tall and slim like I am. So there's
that makes sense.
Yeah, but I really should have been doing squats and building my lower body up, and it wouldn't have been a big of a deal. But once your legs wear out, you start using your lower back, and it's just, it's tough.
So you did a little horse training as well?
Off and on. Yeah, I did some. Mm-hmm. Yes, uh-huh. sir.
as far as training, as far as like cutting, do you do any of that?
I help. Well, I worked with Bob Cunningham doing that. I've done a little bit on my own horses. But, yeah, I've done a little bit of that. And then a lot of people, they needed their horses retrained. So they knew what they were doing. But like so many things, they become a pasture ornament, and so they don't get rode. So they wanted me to get on them and make them mind and remember what they are supposed to be doing. So I did more of that than starting from a 2-year-old and working my way up. I didn't do a lot of that because it takes a lot of time, takes having your own property with your own barns and that kind of thing. And I never really wanted to get into all that. And if you screw a horse up, he's screwed up for, it takes a long time to fix him. And I don't want to get a reputation or anything by screwing up horses or whatever. I want to make sure I knew what I was doing, and I just didn't mess with them.
You know where screwed up horses go? Mm-hmm. Auction.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, or out on a pasture somewhere, and they just said, you're done. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
yeah, I know that for a fact because there for a while, and we had horses when I lived over in Hardin. We had a barn and it was really nice. We had a nice little arena to ride around and pasture and nice barn stalls and everything. But my family, you know, they were into getting deals. They go to an auction, bring back some horses, you know. And this one horse, I mean, you know, they all had issues. They all had sure. problems. You know, you try to work the issues out.
Sure.
And then later on, you take them back to the auction.
Right. But, right.
Yeah. Now, what would you do, for example, if you had a horse and it reared? You got on it, the thing went to rear up all the time. What would you do about that?
Well, the old timers, and this is a story my uncle told, the old timers would take, you know, a stick or a club or something in their hand. Now, if they rear up and they want to come over on you, that's when you got to get serious about it. If they rear up, you know, you might be able to work that out of them. But if they really were rear up and get serious, they'd hit them right between the ears with a
club,
you
know, a club or whatever, a bat, a baseball bat,
yeah,
or something.
Baseball bat. And my uncle was
I guess that would like, I mean, could you kill them doing
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah, you could kill them, yeah. You could, but he knocked one out. My uncle Donnie knocked one out one time and just laid it out next to the road, and Orrin Priest happened to be coming by, who his son later became a famous horseshoe around this area. But he asked my uncle, he said, did you kill him? He said, well, he wasn't any good like he was. And if I fixed him, then he'd be a better horse. But nowadays, I couldn't tell you the very updated version, but you can get a water balloon. You could get maybe an egg or two. You can get something that smack them on the top of the head and makes them feel like they got blood coming down their head, and it scares them bad enough. You just have to scare them out of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's what I heard some people do. I never had that a horse that had that problem. But
you know, I could see an owner of a horse maybe getting a little bit kind of funny about you clubbing the horse up top.
Yeah, they're a lot more sensitive about that anymore, and they should be. There's a lot better ways of doing stuff than they used to be.
What did you like about horses? What was the thing, you know, that drew you to horses? Because I mean, I was drawn to horses myself since I was a kid as well. Now I've had my fill of horses, and I have no really desire to get in the horse business again. But what drew you to horses?
I really don't know. I was born and raised here in town. I mean, it's a small town, but just raised around there. My uncle always had them, and I thought he was my hero, so that was part of it. And then I got around them when I was a little kid. They just fascinated me, and it's just one of those things that you just that's in you, and you don't know how it got there necessarily or what happened. Of course, we all, you know, I read Westerns and I watched them some on TV, and you get all that stuff too. And every kid, you know, from the 30s, 40s, 50s on up till probably the 80s when, you know, everybody was into the space, you know, wars or I guess I got focused on other things. But the cowboy was the rule for years, you know, in the United States. He was the – so I don't know if that was it or not. There's just something – but when I got on him, that was a whole different deal. I fell in love with it when I started riding him. You look at him as one thing, getting on him, riding him, getting used to it. And there's a whole nother lingo to it. You know, so I guess that fascinated me, the different kinds of halters and saddles and all the lingo that goes with it, all the different colors, that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by all that stuff. And I said, I'm going to learn it, whether I do it the rest of my life or not, one way or another. I'm going to figure out what a Tapadero is or what a Hackmore is or what all the stuff. I want to find out what it was.
Yeah, it's fun being a cowboy.
Yeah,
I mean, and also we grew up watching cowboys and they made it look like it was so much fun.
All our heroes
were cowboys.
Yeah, and for the most part, it is. Yeah, it is fun. And I started trail riding and camping out, and there's nothing better for me. I think Ronald Reagan said there's nothing better for the inside of a man than the outside of a horse. And for me, that's the best therapy there is.
Yeah, I hear you. Horses are cool. If you're just joining us, I have Danny Lane, the cowboy handyman, and he gets that name honestly. Working, Danny, do you work pretty much in the Jerseyville area? Do you go outside of Jerseyville, or our Tri-County area? What's your area that you cover?
Pretty much from Jerseyville into Godfrey, Alton. I'm working in Bethalto right now. The farthest I think I've went is Maryville. Glen Carbon area in Maryville. That's probably the farthest I've been in this particular, what I'm doing now.
You told me what your rates were, and me being in the construction business for 25 years, I thought they were really reasonable. I won't say them over the air. You can tell people yourself, but I thought they were reasonable. And what's your forte? What do you like doing as far as like somebody? What's your specialties?
I don't know if I have a
specialty. I know you got a lot of them, but give me your top one.
I lean more toward trim carpentry, I guess, because I did a lot of it. I like to walk away and look at it and say, man, that looks a lot better than what it was. Paint something that looks a lot better. Putting up new trim, casing, base, whatever it is. You walk away and say, that looks nice. I did a good job, and I can leave. Plumbing, I can do it, but I don't really care for it.
Right.
It's not my thing. Those guys get paid a lot of money for good reason. And I can do toilets and faucets and all that kind of stuff. I don't have any problem with all that. But electrical, I like electrical. If I was going to pick one thing to do, and I thought about it, getting on with the electrical company, but I like electricity because it's pretty much the same all the time. You show up and there's a neutral and there's a positive and there's a ground. And, unless somebody's really screwed something up, you just do your thing. It's always pretty much the same thing. Breakers, breaker boxes, that kind of.
Yeah. Especially residential.
Right. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And electric is clean.
Right.
Electrical work is clean work.
Exactly right.
Sometimes other things aren't so clean.
No. No, it's like the gentleman. I call it the gentleman's,
Yeah, right, yeah. Electrician shows up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could be in a bow tie and looking good, right?
Yeah, you don't have to get that dirty, sometimes. So, yeah.
How about painting? You do any painting?
Yeah, I do a lot. I do quite a bit, really. I got an account with Sherwin-Williams, and I started that a year or so ago, and they help me with things, all the time. If I get stuck on something or if I have questions or whatever, I call down there, and they take care of me, and that's the paint I like to use. But, yeah, mainly indoor. I haven't done a lot of outdoor. Done any outdoor, actually. I don't know why. It just was never a call for it because most people have siding or around here, or whatever. They don't have a lot of houses to paint outside.
Yeah, so in painting, I know painters. Everybody thinks painting is easy,
yeah.
Right? They think it's easy, mm-hmm. But there is a skill to painting.
Yeah,
and there's some definitely a skill trimming mm-hmm. and rolling. You can learn a lot from a good painter. That's
right.
For sure.
Right.
What do you think? Just to share with the listeners, there could be somebody who says, "Man, I'm getting ready to paint my room, but maybe I could do it myself." What's the ABCs of painting?
I mean, you got to prep the walls. That's always a good thing to start out with. You can wipe them down. Sometimes I do. Sometimes, depending on what's on it, get all the nails and the junk out of it and see what's going on.
What's the best filler to use as far as filling for nail holes or little dents and stuff in the walls? What do you recommend?
I mean, I like spackle. It dries quick. I kind of like the pink. It's got a little color to it, and then when it dries, it turns white, so you kind of know when it's dry, when it can be painted over or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Spackle's good. You can use a little bit of mud. I've done that too. Just, there's several things, but I like spackle.
Like if you're going to paint a room, okay, do you like to roll on the wall paint first or trim it first?
I trim it out first. And I used to trim all around the top and then in the bottom, I'd do the whole room, and then I'd go back and start rolling. And I had a guy, a friend of mine that paints, he's a painter. That's all he does. And he said, a lot of times you'll get ghosting if you paint, especially if you paint multiple rooms, if you trim out multiple rooms, and then you go back later and roll them, you'll see ghosting at the top. You'll see an extra, you'll see, you know, you see at the top or maybe at the bottom, it's like there's another a ring up there. He called it ghosting.
Yeah.
That's what I said. So now I'll trim, I'll cut in one room and then just paint that one room right then.
Okay.
Or maybe do it by wall, but sometimes not that drastic, but I'll.
Is your philosophy cut once, not twice, or are you too cut?
Oh, boy. It depends on... That depends on the house. You know, if it's a really nice house, custom-made house, I might go back in and cut twice on a HUD home or rental property. I don't usually bother. But I got to where, and I don't know, honestly don't know what the commercial or what the union guys actually do, but I've, over time, they got these little 4-inch rollers. And so I cut in a section, and I'll go back with that roller and kind of roll over that. So I've got a lot bigger area that I kind of cut in with. I cut in with the brush at the top, and then a lot of times I'll roll under that. And so I kind of get some of that stuff out of the way right away instead of doing it twice. But
do you ever do any spraying?
I did a basement one time, it was just a brick type, old type foundation. He wanted it all painted, so I did that.
Yeah.
But as far as doing that, no, I haven't done it on a house or anything that, you know.
So some of your forte, you love trimming, you like painting. Anything else that that comes under your catalog of things that you like to do as far as handyman work?
I mean, I've hung a little bit of drywall. I can finish it out. I'm finishing out a basement or a garage in Bethalto right now, among other things. So I can tape and mud. I can do some of that. I've hung drywall.
Me before the interview, we were talking a little bit, and you said, you don't really like to get tied up for a long time. You like to get in, get out. You know, take care of a job, get in, and then go on your way and hit the next one.
Yeah, so. I don't. I mean, I'm not going to do a complete remodel on a house or anything. I don't want to do room additions. I don't really do decks unless they're.
Well, you're a one-man show, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it takes time. Two guys, well, you could blow through something a lot faster. You know, I'd take on more if I did that, but I can shingle something small. You know, I've done shingling. I don't like it. I don't care for it, but I do a little shed maybe.
Yeah.
Or I've had some people that they blew some tabs or they blew some of it off, and so I went back and laced some of that in. So, I mean, I know how to do some of that stuff. I just kind of stay away from it. You know, I fix siding before I understand vinyl siding. I can work some of that up and fix it. You know, guttering, all that stuff. There's not a whole lot I can't do. Yeah. I always said, if you give me enough time, there's nothing I can't get on YouTube and figure out. There really
isn't. Well, there you go. That's for sure.
You know.
Any last words of wisdom before we close out this interview?
I don't know if I have any wisdom to share with you, but just if you hire somebody, you know, just make sure they know what they're doing. Try to get some references maybe, or just be careful with who you hire, because I go back behind people that really have messed stuff up, and it bothers me. You know, to see the work of some people.
How do people contact you?
I don't really have a website or anything. You just have to get my number, or I can give it out now.
Yeah, go ahead. What is it?
It's 618-616-2252. I have cards at RP. I have cards at Home Depot.
Okay.
So there's people that know me. You can talk to Chris Lorden, obviously.
Yeah, you call me. I'll give you a number.
Right.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's nice to be here.
Have a great day.
Thank you.